welcome. I'm your host, Bryce Tinson. Obert, we had quite the football weekend, did we not?
Yeah, we did. Pretty sad to see the college football season go out the way it did. That was kind of embarrassing for everyone involved. TCU, Georgia, I think, TCU, Michigan to some extent.
Yeah.
Having lost to that team. It was just ugly, but, you know, football, Sunday, or NFL was kind of cool, I guess. But, yeah, ugly look in the national championship.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of takes on Twitter, and I'm going to address a lot of them. I have some of my own takeaways as well. But first, I want to hear your thoughts on that game. We'll start with the national championship, the most fresh in our head, and then we'll get into our NFL takeaways, and then we'll go from there. We'll see how much time we've used on this podcast. But I feel like I will be talking for quite a bit. So give me your thoughts on this championship game.
First and foremost, I thought from the very get-go that TCU lights were too bright. I firmly believe that they got out onto that stage and in front of everybody, it just seemed like they were immediately, you know, didn't want to be there, were scared to be there. Duggan missed two wide open throws pretty early on to receivers that either would have gotten first downs or much more. I think the first pass of the game, it's like, okay, missed throw that could have gone for 20 yards and really could have gotten some steam going for TCU. You know, I talked about how in the last couple of last episodes, how important it was the first stretches of the game. Well, before you even blink, Georgia's up 10-0.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. You start with the ball, and Duggan can't connect to a wide receiver unless he is butt naked open 60 yards down the field, which we did saw. Or see. But, you know, so that was kind of the main issue was, you know, they were, you know, for whatever reason, because, you know, the bright lights of the Fiesta Bowl didn't faze them.
Yep.
You know, I think in some respects, some of the other big games didn't really faze them. But as soon as they got to the national championship, and it probably had to do with it being Georgia, an undefeated team that had, you know, won the national championship the previous year, I think it was probably, you know, a bit of an intimidation factor.
Yep.
And Georgia, like Kirby Smart said, well, I'll get into Georgia's perspective later. And from that point on, I think TCU couldn't really get any rhythm going. But, you know, what's the bottom line? I don't think for TCU they are, you know, this fraudulent team that was never good in the first place. It's a lot of people who were low on TCU the whole year. And then as soon as they slip up once, it's okay, yep. This is what they've been the entire year. They played their worst game of the season in the national championship. It's humiliating. It's embarrassing. It's, you know, the worst possible circumstance. But at the end of the day, you could look at any of their other 13 games. You look at even the Texas game. And I said to myself, okay, that team alone, yeah, I do think that's a playoff team. I think the team that beat Michigan is a national championship team, not a national championship winning team,
yeah.
At least one that plays in it. So, I think it's unfair to judge them based off of their worst game of the season.
Yep.
Why it came in the national championship, again, I don't know. My guess is bright lights. You're playing against an undefeated team who's the defending national champion. But that would really be my guess. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, Duggan didn't play nearly well enough. He had the two picks early on. And, you know, they just really could not get anything going in the running game. And that was what it was. But I think Georgia's defense – for the first time in a long time, really flexed its muscles. I'll pivot to Georgia now, what I thought about their performance. So much talk, especially for me, had been about how Georgia wasn't quite the team they were last year. To some extent, I don't really think they are.
No, I still don't think they are.
I think going back to last season, there's no chance in hell, you know, the Ohio State game would have been as close as it was. And I said this last episode, we can think whatever we want. We can say whatever we want after a 65-7 blowout. That's true. I saw with my own eyes, Ohio State outplayed Georgia in the semifinal. That's a fact. That
yeah.
Happened. That is totally legitimate. This game could have been 100-7. I still would have believed that because that's what happened, you know, and, you know, they looked fantastic against TCU, but this is kind of what this team was this year. And, you know, they had some of their best games of the season. And then they kind of, you know, like the Oregon game, for example, I thought they looked fantastic. And then they would play kind of really duds. They were just kind of an up yep. and down team. Typically, those teams kind of get taken advantage of. I think Alabama a little bit had that this year. But unfortunately, you know, because they played their best games at the right time, you know, you look at the Tennessee game and the Oregon game, South Carolina game to some extent.
Yeah.
It was like
they played lights out in that game. Right. For you know, hindsight, seeing how good South Carolina actually ended up being. I mean, that was a great performance.
They were didn't really get picked off because they stepped up to the challenge in every big game they played, except for the Ohio State game. But typically those types of teams that are either really good or really bad in a given week get picked off a couple of times. This team didn't. And a bit of that is luck, a bit of that is scheduling, and a bit of that is Kirby Smart motivating his players. I think the luck shows up when Noah Ruggles misses a 50-yard field goal. I've never seen any kicker miss a field goal. But, I don't know. I think, you know, judging based off of like last night, it's easy to say, all right, this is one of the best teams in college football history. But when you take a step back and you look at this team's season and kind of resume as a whole, I don't buy it. And I'm sorry, 65-7 was very impressive. To me, I thought it had more to do with TCU completely being way too afraid of the situation, the stage. They've had a great season. TCU has had a fantastic season. They're a totally legitimate team. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, Georgia, from their standpoint, they played their best game of the season, no doubt.
Yeah.
Looking at it as a whole, they're not close to the team they were last year. No. I really believe that. Offensively, they were fantastic. Mm-hmm. I think they were better than last year, and that's not even a discussion. But defensively, I'm sorry, I still don't buy it. 7 points against TCU, that was a great performance. But again, Ohio State, 41 points.
Yeah.
And again, they got flat
LSU,
out.
LSU, 35 points.
Right. So to me, you know, I don't know. It's up for interpretation, but that was my main takeaway from that. And, you know, no disrespect to Georgia. They were far and away the best team in the country this year. That goes without saying. I mean, you know, no conversation about that. Only thing I was talking about was, are they better than last year? Are they better than 2019 LSU, which I saw? Which is like, are you kidding me? That 2019 LSU team was the greatest team I've ever seen on a college football field. But you're going to tell me that this team, that just because they wiped kind of a, you know, sorry TCU team, as far as national championship. I don't really buy that. So those were my main thoughts, but props to Stetson Bennett. He played a fantastic game. I think his draft stock will probably go up. And
I don't know if it will. He doesn't like you mentioned, he's 25. We know what he is. I tweeted this. I feel like he's just a top tier backup. I feel like that's kind of what he is. And he, you know, maybe he does turn out to be like a Tom Brady. The kid's just really smart, puts the ball in the right spot, knows where he needs to go. Not in the sense that he has all the accolades, but like, you know, he's not the strongest thrower of the football, but he puts the ball in the right spot more times than not. And he's a pretty good leader.
As little traits as Tom Brady has, Stetson Bennett has about half as many.
Exactly.
The one thing he does have is he is a lot. He's a much better athlete than Tom Brady.
Yes.
That is legit. Like, he is a for real athlete. I saw that a couple of times.
He might have 4.6 speed.
Seriously, his read option touchdown run, it's like, whoa, that looked fast. And then the zero blitz the TCU spot where
he just spun out and just ran.
The rusher, and he just spins out of it and picks up 20 yards and a first down. Like, those were two legitimate plays. The question is, at his size and lack of arm strength, how much does it matter? I don't know. But I do think, you know, there's probably a place, there's definitely a place for him in the NFL. Just a matter of, can he start on Sundays? Probably not.
Yeah. And I've got a bunch of things that I want to say. First thing is that I saw Nolan Smith, you probably saw this too, after the game, say that, you know, people had us going 7-5. And I've seen some people tweet this, but my first thought when I saw that was, Kirby Smart deserves Coach of the Year for gaslighting his team to think that they were actually, like, that people actually thought they were going to be 7-5.
Right.
Everybody I saw either had them in the SEC championship game or me with one loss, and it was to Tennessee. Like nobody had them at 5 losses. I mean, it's just, that's unbelievable.
Kurt was like ghostwriting.
Exactly.
You know, sports article saying, Georgia's going to go 7-5 and then show
the ultimate motivator, Kirby Smart.
You know what this guy thinks about you.
The first main thing I want to touch on is, we overreact to football all the time because it is, you play one game a week and that is all you have. Football is such a week to week sport You only play one time. And so if you have to put your best foot forward every single time if you want to be held in the same light as some of the greatest of all time. That's what LSU did in 2019. That's what Alabama did in 2020. It's what FSU did in 2013. But newsflash, and I keep saying this over and over and over again, guys, these are kids. Like, they're not going to be perfect every single week. And you're seeing that with TCU. Listen, this TCU team was not the same team that Michigan played last week. And I saw a bunch of people on Twitter saying, oh, this is the team that Michigan lost to? No, no. Did you watch that game? This doesn't even look like the same team. They came out on that field, and after the first drive, it was like, well, where was the TCU I just saw? There was no fight. There was no grit. There was no determination. It seemed like they left everything they had out on the Fiesta Bowl field, and maybe they did. But, you know, week to week, this is what TCU did was what they did in the Michigan game. They outperformed expectations. They played to the whistle. They didn't do that last night, and I don't know why. You can have your reasonings as to what you think happened on that football field and why they didn't show up, but that wasn't the TCU that played this season. I saw a lot of people saying that they're a 7-5 team. No, they're not. Get the fuck out of here. Brandon Walker. I mean, what an idiot.
What a joke.
It's, you know, TCU was a fantastic team. They deserved to be here just as much as, you know, anybody else. They won the Fiesta Bowl. They went 12-1 in the regular season. But I don't know what happened to them. They were absolutely dead. It seemed like the minute they stepped out on the field, they were overmatched. They didn't want to be there. It seemed like really they were happy with being there, that they didn't actually want to win the game.
I have an important thing to say. Like, folks, and you touched on this. I'm going, I really want to hammer it home, but like, folks, these are 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25-year-old kids. They're kids. Okay.
I like that 10-year range we got from 15 to 25. But
okay, yeah. Fine. 17 to 25.
Okay, there we go. I like that. I think that's probably, it was more probably like 18 to 25, but I'll accept 17. But I also think there has to be something, there is something to be said about Georgia's ability to prepare over the span of 9 days versus TCU. I mean, there's a reason, and I think this is why the Ohio State game was as close as it was, is because you give Ryan Day, you know, a month to prepare, you give him 30 days to prepare, he's going to come up with a good game plan. I mean, we see them, you know, in the first game of the season, more times than not, Ohio State looks like they're ready to go, and it's because you've had so much time to prepare for that team. But we saw them come out against Michigan after 7 days off, and their game plan was the same as it was the year before that didn't work. But you give Ryan Day that extended time, he's going to find weak points. He's going to find places to attack, and he did. TCU did the same thing to Michigan. And yes, they got a little bit lucky with some of those plays, but they made them. You got to give them credit there. I think the difference is that Kirby Smart and his staff, Todd Monken, the same, they're better preparing over the course of a week than TCU is, and I think that really showed on the field. The game plan for Georgia was, I mean, a lot of it was just get the ball to your playmakers in space and let them make plays, and they did that. But, you know, they schemed guys open, and it seemed like TCU just wasn't ready for it. And I do think that they used some of what Michigan did poorly, you know, running the ball in between the tackles way too often and attacked the edges, which is where TCU was weak this season. So I do want to give credit to Georgia there. And I saw some people saying, this is another point I want to make, point two of like seven that I have. People were saying that, you know, if Jameson Williams and Marvin Harrison don't get hurt, Georgia isn't back-to-back champions. Well, if my aunt had balls, she would be a man. You know, Georgia won those games. Like, injuries happen. They're a part of the game. Georgia is the premier power in college football right now. And for people to do these what ifs, like, you know, almost only works in horseshoes and hand grenades. You can't say, I almost beat Georgia. You know, if this didn't happen, it did happen, and you weren't able to respond. That is what you have to deal with. And for people to, you know, discredit Georgia because of those two injuries is unbelievable. They were the best team in college football for this span of 2 years. And for people to take that away is just absolutely ludicrous. It just shows the IQ Georgia of those people.
They beat Ohio State even more soundly. So
exactly. And so, you know, I just that to me was, I saw that take and I was like, you got to be kidding me. Like, seriously, asterisk championship. Come on, man. What are we doing? So there was that. Obviously, you had Ohio State fans marching around on Twitter saying, oh, if we, you know, Noah Ruggles had just made that kick, then we would have been playing in the national championship. Well, and they're like, oh, we're better than Michigan. You know, I don't know about you, but I watched that game on the 27th or 26th, whatever day it was, and I saw Michigan win by 22 points. Are they actually 22 points better than Ohio State? Probably not. Are they the better team? Absolutely. I mean, there is, you play that game 10 times, I think Michigan wins 7 of them. Right. Seriously, I mean, what happened on that field to make you think that Ohio State is the better team? The reason why they're saying that is because Georgia played their best game of the season in the semifinal game, where Michigan played their worst game of the season. That is the only comparison they're using.
It's so funny because everyone wants to use the, you know, semifinals and then the national championships to like somehow make this argument of like, oh, well, then somehow Ohio State's better than Michigan.
Yeah.
Oops, we don't have to play the hypothetical game. We saw that game being played.
We played it.
Pretty ugly. You know, so, yeah, everyone, they get in this trap where it's like, well, Michigan sucks, and Ohio State's awesome because Ohio State almost won the national championship, so Ohio State should be, oh, wait, we saw Ohio State and Michigan play.
Yeah.
And everyone's in this bind where it's like, I don't know. I guess Michigan choked. I don't know. It's like,
and they probably did. I mean, they probably did choke.
Right. A little bit. And these are 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22.
Exactly.
5-year-old kids. And they have their best game of the season. And then they have their worst game of the season. You know, I mean, this happens.
Yeah.
This sort of thing happens. TCU, like you said, this is the most important thing. People think it's just, you know, oh, the transitive property.
Yep.
This team beat that team, therefore that team's better than this. Like, whatever. It's so stupid. Like, folks, TCU is not just some control variable where it's just like
the same every single time.
Exactly how good they are every single time in every game they play. No, some games they're fantastic. Some games they're terrible. Some games they're same thing with Georgia. Mm-hmm. Georgia was fantastic against TCU. They played their worst game of the season against Ohio State. College football teams, I've said this over and over and over again, are not control variables. Stop pretending like they are. God.
Yep. And another thing I saw, Alabama should have been in the college football playoff. Listen, with the system we have right now, that's just absolutely false. It's ludicrous for you to say that Alabama with two losses deserved to get in over TCU with one because Alabama only lost by a combined 5 points or 4 points, whatever it was. They still lost two games. I don't know what you want me to say. That LSU team turned out to not be very good. You know, so that loss is really inexcusable. Yeah, you lost to Tennessee with Joe Milton on a last-second field goal, but it was a game that you also should have won. Your kicker had a chance to win that game, and he just straight-up missed the kick. We're not going to give you a...
Hendon Hooker, though?
What did I say? Yeah, I meant Hendon Hooker. Your kicker just missed the kick. Like, the same way that Ohio State's, that Noah Ruggles missed the kick in the, we're not putting Ohio State in the championship game because of a kicker missing a kick. Like, you have to play the games on the field. And, you know, this brings me to my next point is that, you know, when you expand to 12, this stuff is going to work itself out. But before I get there, I do want to say that the SEC riding the coattails of Georgia right now is absolutely pathetic. I mean, I've seen SEC people parading around Twitter, around Instagram, all the social media saying, oh, this is why the SEC should just have, you know, three teams make the playoffs every single year, or two teams, they should just, you know, make the SEC championship game the playoff. It's like, yeah, Georgia played a really damn good game. They're the best team in college football. That doesn't make the rest of the conference good. Like, I don't know where this notion comes from that just because the best team in your conference is the best team in college football, it makes you the best conference. And yeah, it probably is the best conference, but they also had a bunch of teams look terrible in bowl season. Like, I don't get, like, LSU beat up on a Purdue team that literally was playing their fourth string guys. I mean, congratulations. Iowa was playing with their backups and beat Kentucky with their backups. So you can take both sides of the spectrum, and what do you get in the result? Well, Georgia's really fucking good. I mean, the rest of the conference was okay. Right? Like, I mean, Alabama was probably a really good team, but they lost twice. LSU wasn't very good. Tennessee was a really good team, although they lost to South Carolina with, you know, Hendon Hooker playing. I mean, he played most of that game, and they were down. Like, South Carolina ended up getting,
they were down like 28.
Exactly. And South Carolina ended up getting their butts kicked by Notre Dame in the bowl game. So, like, you know, it is what it is. I don't really get this, oh, the SEC is just that much better than everybody else. No, just because your best team is really good doesn't make you better than everybody else. It's just not how it works, which is why I
that's probably my biggest pet peeve within college football, is somehow finding some sort of elitism in your best team from your conference beating other teams. It's like, I root for my team. Like, for me, it's like, I have a team at every conference, so I really don't know,
exactly,
you know, like, what conferences do well. But at the end of the day, I want my team to do well. Mm-hmm. I don't want the best team from my conference to do well at all. Like, I'm not elitist like that, where it's like, oh, well, we won the, or our team won the national championship, so we're playing in the best conference. Who gives a hoot?
Yeah.
If you're finishing 12th in your conference, who
cares?
Does
it really matter? Like,
right. It's like, I do not care. And frankly, you know, for Georgia, it's like you said, yeah, they were the best team. Who knew? Right? Like, yes, Georgia's really good. Oh my God, I'm stunned. I feel like we already knew that, you know? Yeah. So whatever. And, you know, half of this conference stuff is going to fundamentally change when we get, you know, four massive brands changing, you know, with USC and UCLA going to the Big Ten and then Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC. So conferences as we know it, you know, it's fluid, and you know, this stuff is going to fundamentally change, I think, in a couple of years. When schools go to different conferences, the Big Ten could be, I mean, you know, you look at how USC's trajectory of that program, they could be, you know, potentially another top 10 team for the Big Ten, and for a conference that got two teams in the playoff. I said this, like, Big Ten, I think they're in as good a shape as anybody. What you want, revenue speaking wise, is teams in the playoff.
Yeah.
That's what you want. But, and you know, if you get a national championship, fine. But it's not like South Carolina is making $1 billion because, you know, Georgia won the national championship. Yeah. They might have gotten a revenue boost because they're playing in it. But it really comes down to getting teams in the playoff. And hopefully you'll get one in. But,
yeah,
you know, that's a circumstance.
It's just, it's really pathetic because, you know, when Ohio State won in 2014, granted, I was, you know, 8 years younger than I am now. I wasn't like, hey, oh, look, we play in the same conference as Ohio State. We're really good. Like, if I'm Alabama, I'm absolutely pissed that Georgia just won a national championship. I'm not being like, oh my gosh, this is why we should have been in SEC, SEC, SEC. And no, it's the fact that, you know, your biggest competitor in your conference outplayed you the entire season and then went on to, you know, kick the other team's ass in the national championship game. You should be pissed that that happened and it wasn't you. You shouldn't be like, oh, that should have been us in the national championship game. You could have got there. You had every opportunity. So
it's funny. It's like rooting for one college football team isn't enough tribalism for people. They have to then root for
entire conference.
Right. and then take on that. It's like, once my team's out, all right, I need another rooting interest. So I'll take on another form of tribalism. My conference, go SEC, go ACC, go Pac-12, go Big Ten. Come on, folks. What are we doing?
Now I will say, you know, I like to see the Big Ten do well because it means Michigan, you know, when Michigan played those teams, it meant, hey, you know what? That team was actually, in the grand scheme of things, not a bad team.
Right.
It's not like I'm like, oh, I need this team to win because that way I can say Big Ten is better than this other. No, it's like that way I can validate my thoughts about, hey, maybe Iowa wasn't such a bad team. They just, you know, offensively, they suck.
Yeah, I like to root for, when it comes to bowl season, I typically root for teams I've watched.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, I followed storyline. Like Penn State, I root for in the Rose Bowl game. Yep. But that was not out of some sort of sense of, you know, I'm fundamentally better than you because of the conference that Penn State plays in. And, you know, USC, obviously, I root for. I root for South Carolina, frankly, as a Clemson guy, in the Gator Bowl because I'd watched him play the past few weeks.
Exactly. It was like, you know, with Penn State, it kind of felt like, you know, the rest of the country was disrespecting them. But because we were Big Ten people, we were able to watch them. I mean, they were readily available to us, and we saw how good of a team they were and that they were getting disrespected on a national scale. So it was cool to see them go and play a Utah team that, you know, for the most part, had most of their guys and play really well.
Yep.
Last thing I want to say is I saw this again, and it's going to be a topic of discussion because there's stupid people that keep bringing it up. We can't expand the playoffs because of this game. I would argue that expansion of the playoffs is better because of this game, because this game doesn't happen in the national championship game, because TCU wouldn't have made it. right? So in the end, you won't get a 13.5 point spread for the national championship game because the teams that are supposed to be there are going to be there. And you're going to get, and people are going to be like, well, we're going to have these games in the semifinal games. Does it look like I care? Do you know what we saw in the bowl games? We saw Alabama kick the shit out of Kansas State. We saw Tennessee make Clemson look foolish. And I mean, these are teams that are also not at full strength either. But like at the same time, it's like, well, if it's bound to happen, at least make it mean something for both teams. Like, don't make it a meaningless bowl game. If we're going to see blowouts, we're going to see blowouts. It's going to happen either way. So make it in a meaningful playoff game where both teams are actually playing for something, and it's not just some, you know, trivial thing that we do for sponsorship money.
Right. I mean, yeah, no, I don't really buy the argument that, like, if we understand, okay, the four-team college football playoff made the teams that got in really, really good, and then the teams that didn't really, really bad. It made the rich richer and the poor poorer. Then wouldn't it make sense to make as many teams possible rich, in a sense, get as many teams into the college football playoff consistently? That way you have, instead of four teams that are really good or four kind of mini dynasties, you have 12 or you have 14 or 16 or whatever it might be that, you know, are really good teams and can recruit year after year after year rather than just the same old four. And I think that was kind of the heart of at least the casual fans' biggest gripe with the college football playoff was the same four teams get in every year. The 12 team playoff really fixes the root of that problem. So I don't know.
You also add the fact that like there's less of a chance that we see Georgia repeat every single year, or that we would see Alabama playing in the national. There's a reason why, and yes, it's comparing apples to oranges because the NFL is the ultimate league of parity, but like there's a reason why we don't see the same Super Bowl every single year. And it's because you have to win the games. And so if 12 teams make it and you're playing those games, well then who's to say that Georgia is going to win every single game? I mean, we saw the game against Ohio State. They didn't play their best game. That can happen in a 12-team playoff. We saw Tulane beat a USC team. Yes, it wasn't a full-strength USC team, but we saw it happen. Those games matter to those teams. And to say that they're not going to, you know, that all of them, blanket statement, that all of them are going to end up in a 65-7, you know, win for the historical powerhouse, it's just, it's elitist. That's what it is. And it's weird because the people I'm seeing say this don't strike me as elitist type people, but they want the regular season to matter so much, and I don't really understand why. Like games need to be won in the playoffs for you to be the national champion. I don't understand why it's like, hey, your game against, you know, 5-7 Michigan State is the most important game of the season. Why? Like that game matters because it's a rivalry game. That game shouldn't matter because, oh, if Michigan loses this game, if they slip up one time, they're automatically disqualified from playing for the national championship game. Like, I don't understand that.
I used to be a person back in the day who wanted to go back down to two because, you know, I thought the regular season was so important and that was the kind of pride of college football. But the only difference is you're just redistributing those regular season games that might have, you know, like huge playoff impacts to the, you know, actual playoffs, whether it be 12, 16 or whatever, and making those games for sure win or go home. And in doing that, like you said, Georgia, instead of having one game that is win or go home, they have to play three or four or whatever. And as those games increase, there is a more likely chance that they get, you know, taken out. We see it in the NCAA tournament every single year. We see it in the NFL playoffs every single year. The one seed or overall one seed can get tripped up by any number of teams. Yes, they'll have the easiest path, but at the end of the day, you make them play seven games to win the whole thing, six games, five, whatever the number is, like it is in the NCAA tournament, they're going to get tripped up if they're even slightly fraudulent or slightly inconsistent. Frankly, I don't know if this Georgia team does win the whole thing if
it's a 12 team. Yeah.
To 12 or 16 or whatever. So, you know, yeah, it's ridiculous. And like I said, yes, obviously you're devaluing the regular season by expanding the playoff. That's the point of a playoff. But instead of guessing, oh, well, will this game have playoff implications or not, like we did with the Georgia-Tennessee game.
Or with the Michigan-Ohio State game.
Right. We would just put that game in the playoff And then we'll know, okay, this is the game that is win or go home with all the circumstances, all the hype, all the stakes. And, you know, with the pageantry alone, those regular season games will get tons of views, tons of ratings.
And I want to say two things real quick. I don't agree with how they did the 12-team playoff. I think the 12 is fine. I don't agree with the automatic buys for the conference champions, because we saw what would happen this year if that was the case. Like, this was the absolute worst case scenario for that to happen, because, you know, I went back and charted it. For the most part, it makes sense. This is the one year where it doesn't, and it's because ultimate chaos happened. And I do think they should reseed like the NFL does. I think that's the best way to figure out, you know, who really deserves to be there out of the 12 teams that we have is reseed in the second round. That way it's not like, oh, well, this team had an easier path. It should be, the one seed gets the easiest path because they were the one seed. Yeah. So I do think that there are some flaws with the system, although I think that expanding it is the ultimate best possible scenario for college football. And the second thing that I really want to say is that it's kind of weird to me that it's the college football purists that are saying this about the game, because this is better, like you said, for the people who are kind of like, they come in, they're vultures with college football, where they don't always watch, but they're kind of like, they pick off the top what they want to see and stuff like that. They graze a little bit. And so this will make more games matter to that person. But if you're only watching certain games because of the college football playoff implications as a college football purist that most of these people claim to be, then I'm extremely disappointed in you, because that's not what college football is about. It's never what it's been about. And yes, we're going to a more national game, but it's always been about the interregional. It's been about the regional rivalries. It's been about the regional game of it all. It's been about the pageantry, the traditions. Those don't change with how much you expand the playoffs. They don't. Michigan State is still going to matter. The Iron Bowl is still going to matter. Michigan, Ohio State, it's still, those games are still going to matter, because at the end of the day, being able to say both Michigan and Ohio State made the playoffs, but Michigan can say that they beat Ohio State. Ohio State can't say that. That is what ultimately matters in this sport. And for the people who claim to be such avid lovers and followers of it, to say that, well, this game now doesn't mean as much because both teams are going to make the playoffs. I don't know about you, but if I was playing in that game, if I was playing in the game, I don't care what it's for, I'm still going to put my 110% effort. And I think those players are too, because I know the coaching staff well. It's just so stupid. And at the end of the day, I can't get behind the people that are trying to say that this is bad for college football. I really don't understand how it's going to spread the talent pool across more teams. You're not going to see everybody, like, you're not going to see Jahmyr Gibbs transfer to Alabama. He did that because he thought that that was the place that he could go win a championship, right? Like, he thought that that was the best place. With 12 teams, there's going to be 8 other options for him. And yes, most of those are probably going to be SEC teams, because the SEC has an unfair advantage based off their geography. It's just the way it is. And it's something that college football has had for the entirety of its existence, is that the South just has better players, and it's a lot harder to recruit guys from the South to come play in the cold than it is to be like, hey, here's what we have, and you get to play in this temperature the entire season. Like, right. Like the SEC is probably going to get, you know, 3-4 teams in every single year, but so is the Big Ten. Like, I don't understand, and I think the Big 12 some years might even have 3 teams. I don't know about the Pac-12, because they're really, like, they're dying a little bit. I think Oregon has a shot. I think that Utah, you know, some years can, depending on what Colorado does with Deion, but like, to me, I just don't see how this is a bad thing for college football. I don't get it. And you know, we might look on this in 10 years and be like, oh yeah, this was a bad move. But right now, I just can't. I can't see the path for it to be a bad idea, a bad move for college football.
Yep. More money, you know, and like you said, more parity. It's just better for the consumer, better for the teams, better for the players. I think it's better for everybody involved.
Yeah. So, you know, it is what it is, and that ended up being a pretty extensive college football segment. I told you guys I had a lot to talk about, get off my chest. So we're going to switch gears, go to the NFL, take a quick little break, and then Week 18 is finished. We got our playoffs situation. We're going to have some takeaways based off of that and maybe talk a little bit about the playoffs. So stick around. It's going to be a good one. You're not going to want to miss it.
Recording stopped.
We are back. We got some NFL to talk about. Week 18 happened. It is done with. We had Black Monday happen as well. And we had some interesting things happen. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Ober. Give me your first takeaway from this weekend of NFL football.
That's a good one. Sunday Night Football was the most embarrassing loss in Aaron Rodgers' career. No disrespect, okay? No disrespect to the Lions. They're a really good team. They're 9-8. Absolutely. That's totally legitimate. But I'll tell you something, folks. Okay, you know, Packers, 4-game winning streak going into this game. They were not a great team at all this year. I don't even think they were a good team. They finished 8-9. But coming into this game, they had all the momentum in the world and were playing like a classic Packers team we had seen for years. And, you know, from Aaron Rodgers' perspective, he had lost his previous two playoff home games, including the NFC Championship to the Buccaneers. And then last year against the 49ers in the divisional round, coming off of the one seed in the first round bye, really no excuse to lose that game. And but they did. Then coming into this year, this basically is a win and you're in, feels like a playoff game against a team that has nothing to play for, a team that's never been in a situation like this, 8-8, vying for a winning record with so many young players. And even worse, playing against a defense that throughout the season had ranked as one of the worst in the league. Obviously, they were playing much better football towards the end of the season. But, like, and, you know, the thing with the Lions is they're, you know, really good team throughout this year. But it's been the offense. It's been the offense the entire season that has been very dynamic and very effective. And when you look at this game and you only put up 16 points against one of the worst defenses in the NFL statistically, there's no excuse, especially when Aaron Rodgers himself, as I think it was just the one pick, but almost three picks in this game, two of which were called, or maybe it was just one.
Just one.
It was called back for a penalty. 38.8 QBR. And, you know, obviously he doesn't have the weapons that, you know, other quarterbacks do. But at the end of the day, there's no excuse for this. 16 total points in this game and a bad pick to seal your fate. I'm sorry. It's now three straight basically playoff home games he's lost, or win-or-go-home playoff or home games he's lost at Lambeau. You know, going back 5 years ago, I would have thought playoff game at Lambeau is basically a death sentence. You know, we've seen teams go into that cold and pretty much die. Now I'm like, sheesh, the castle has crumbled. This is a division rival that, you know, historically – this team is owned, and you know Aaron Rodgers is owned, and they pretty much lay an egg offensively. 291 total yards. I mean, just all around really pathetic. And I don't know where you go from here if you're the Packers. I think you can't go away from Aaron Rodgers, but the stigma of Aaron Rodgers is can't get it done in the playoffs, can't get it done when he needs it the most. And it's holding up. It just is. It's bad. It's tough, but I mean,
yeah.
He's one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever do it, but it's so hard to go back to the last 3 years in a game where he needs it the most. He didn't look great in the 49ers game. He didn't look great going back a couple of years ago Tampa. In the NFC Championship game at all against the Buccaneers and Tom Brady. And he did not look even okay in this game against, like I said, a defense that throughout the year, statistically speaking, in one of the best in the league. So this is a really bad loss for the Packers. And I didn't make a takeaway about the Lions, but from the Lions' perspective, what a huge win. This kind of felt like the 2020 Browns playoff win at the Steelers. And I'll say this. I think there is a little bit of, like, the Seahawks losing that game took all of the pressure off of the Lions to win that game. There is no, oh, we have to win this game, therefore we make the playoffs. It's like, no, now we're just spoilers. Now we can just end their hopes, end their season. And it, like I said, totally takes out all the pressure of the game for them and for those young players who have never been in the spot before. They don't really, you know, have to feel this, oh my gosh, Sunday Night Football. Yeah. It obviously was Sunday Night Football, but just the stakes for them aren't really there. And they played free and played loose the entire game. And, you know, Jared Goff didn't play his best game. And you know, especially in the first half, he really struggled. But overall, you know, everybody else, and especially the young guys. I look at Aiden Hutchinson, you know, McNeil, your guys,
Aleem.
Aleem and McNeil.
Nose tackle.
And the defensive Kirby. Tackle just played
Don't
a fantastic
forget about Kirby
game.
Joseph.
Defensively, you guys totally stepped up. And Kirby Joseph, yep, that's a good one too. Rookie safety. All of those guys played extremely free and loose. So I think in some respects that, you know, Seahawks loss worked better for you guys in that Sunday night football game. You probably still could have won it. Would have been interesting to see. But it did seem like the team, especially defensively, played totally comfortable in that environment. So
yeah.
Very interesting game. But, you know, and I took most of it from the Packers' perspective because that was the story of the game. The Packers had all the stakes. They were the only team that actually had something on the line. Obviously, the Lions had a winning season, but no playoffs. So that entire story of the game, the reason why it was on Sunday night was because of the Packers' playoff hopes. That's the truth of it. And so for them, it's a total disaster. For the Lions, it wasn't really a huge thing either way. But as it is, I mean, that's a, you know, huge accomplishment to take down Aaron Rodgers and the Packers and his playoff hopes.
Yeah, and the reason why it wasn't a win and in for both teams is because the Seahawks were gifted a win against the Los Angeles Rams. I mean, I have never seen an officiating job as bad as the one I saw in Seattle. I mean, we're talking about the Fox refs rules analyst coming on multiple times and disagreeing with the call made on the field. I think four times I counted. I mean, we're talking about a running into the punter that shouldn't have been called, that based on the rule book should, like, has no basis for being called. We're talking about an unnecessary roughness on the sideline that was called on Jalen Ramsey in a play where Geno Smith ran right into him. And you could argue was still in bounds. I mean, that one was saved because Jason Myers just doinked a field goal. I mean, the NFL officials, for getting paid as much as they do, need to be held so much more accountable than they are currently. And I saw a tweet couple days ago, 5 days ago, that said that Europe officials that do European basketball games get suspended for game-changing calls in late in game. I think that's something that American sports should adopt, especially at the professional level. I mean, we're talking about, you know, MLB umps, NBA refs, NFL refs. I mean, there are too many calls made in crucial at-bats, crucial minutes of games that swing the momentum of the game, that ultimately decide the outcome. And they don't get punished for it, at least that we know of. I mean, I'm assuming that they go back, they get talked to, they get their review from the head officials at the league, but nothing happens to them. They still get assigned games. They just don't get to do the playoffs. Like, I mean, that's not a big enough punishment for a call that ended up extending a Seahawks drive that ultimately led to a game-tying field goal. And yes, Baker Mayfield didn't do the Lions any favors, but this ultimately comes down to the officials and them not doing what they signed up to do, and that's calling a fair game. I mean, there was a missed intentional grounding, too. It was just, you know, a bunch of stuff that eventually added up in a game that, you know, the Lions weren't playing in, but some, you know, were involved in by proxy of the playoff battle, get screwed over by officiating. I don't want to be that person, and a lot of NFL teams do this, but it feels like, at least me as a Lions fan, and yes, I have some bias here, but it feels like the Lions are screwed over by the refs more so than any other team in the league, at least in the last 10 years that I've really started watching football. It just, I don't see it on a consistent basis in moments that are crucial to the game like I have with the Lions. I mean, it's truly unbelievable, but, you know, it is what it is. I'm glad they were able to pull out a win, and I got another takeaway about the actual game against the Packers. It was just unfortunate that it couldn't be a win-and-in situation for both teams because of poor officiating in that Seahawks-Rams game.
The Cardinals rebuild will take a while. This Yikes. One hurts to say. Cliff gets fired, deservedly so. I mean, we've been, you know, pretty big critics of him since, I think, the losing streak last year, where they start out 8-0 and then finish the season 11-6, I believe.
Yep.
So finishing the season 3-6 with the loss in the playoffs, pretty ugly to the Rams. It just kind of think he's an overrated offensive mind. But I'll say this, as bad as he's been, I think a guy that gives no hate, Steve Kime.
Oh, he's terrible. Oh my God.
is even worse. I mean, I look at the countless moves he made, the countless picks he used in the first round. I think three first round picks in 4 years were used on a safety and two linebackers.
I think
Are you
I think
kidding
he's
me?
He's lived off of one move more than any other GM I have ever seen. Ever.
Right. Makes one great move for DeAndre Hopkins, and all of a sudden he's a great GM, even though, again, uses picks on Isaiah Simmons and Zaven Thompson or
Collins.
Whatever his name is. Zaven Collins, that's right. And just makes so many bad picks. The Buda Baker pick was a good one, but it's just like so many pressing needs. And I look at this third overall pick for the Cardinals. I was thinking about who could they take that could kind of, you know, get them to, all right, the playoffs next year, or, you know, kind of back on track. It's like they've got 10 slots where they need, they've got huge holes. Offensive line, that entire O-line needs revamped. Entire D-line with J.J. Watt retiring needs revamped. I think their corners were very average this season. So every single, you know, really quality position, you look at the five most important positions, you know, for an NFL team, I think quarterback, wide receiver, offensive tackle, corner, defensive end, they're pretty much terrible at three of those positions. Yeah. They're fantastic at two, quarterback and wide receiver, because they traded countless picks, whether it be first round picks for, you know, Marquise Brown, or mid round picks what's his name?
Robbie.
Robbie Anderson, using a second round pick on Rondale Moore, who I love, but just, you know, so many different guys. It's like you're going to be absolutely depleted at so many other quality positions, and they are. I mean, defensive end, they have nobody now. Offensive tackle, O-line, entire O-line, they have nobody. Corner, they're average but not great. So I don't know what the Cardinals do. If it's me, I'm probably looking if, and I think this could happen, if one quarterback goes in the top two picks, let's say the Bears decide to go with Will Anderson Jr. at number one, and the Texans go with Bryce Young at two, like, you know, most people would expect them to, then that third pick becomes very valuable to a quarterback team that wants a C.J. Stroud or Will Levis.
Especially to get in front of the Colts.
Right. And so if you can trade that back down, get two first-round picks, or get a first and 2 seconds, or whatever the situation might be, that's probably what I'd do. This rebuild isn't, you can't just get one guy that will put you over the top to, you know, a Super Bowl run. You have so many holes at key positions that you cannot fix in one free agency period. This isn't, you can maybe do it in two free agency periods. I'll concede that. You can get, you know, a really good corner in this free agency period, and then next year you could do something like that. But fixing it like that, it's not going to happen. Not when you have holes. And like I said, three of the five most important key positions in football. So this is probably going to be a 2 year rebuild, not a 1 year rebuild. And even I think at this point, you know, going into next year, I would be surprised if I thought about this team as a Super Bowl contender. So I don't know. Maybe it takes 3 years, but it is what Steve Keim did to this organization is really the thing that irks me the most. Because I can dismiss.
He's been fired, right?
Calling. Say it again?
He's been fired, right?
Yeah.
No, he resigned. But, he resigned because of health conditions.
Resigned,
that's right. Yeah.
To watch out for his health.
He said, so. That's right. Yeah.
What he did to this franchise will, you know, really, you know, hurt them over years, much more so than, you know, Cliff's bad play calling and Cliff's, you know, lack of original offensive schemes.
No,
I can dismiss some bad play calling. What I can't dismiss is trading away valuable picks for a position where you have no need.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think what he's done has really gone under the radar. But people who really like pay attention to the NFL know that he is one of the worst GMs in the league. I mean, it was not a secret that he should have been gone a long time ago. But I do agree with you. The Cardinals are in a really bad spot. Now, I will say that somebody has to go worst to first. Like, we've seen it 18 of the past 20 seasons. Could it be the Cardinals? I don't know. My next takeaway, whether you like it or not, Jared Goff is the QB of the future for the Detroit Lions. And I am one of the people that, you know, I see what Jared Goff is. He's a guy that struggles in the outdoor elements. Although, admittedly, he had a really good second half against the Packers. First half was, you know, typical what we saw early on in the season when the Lions would play on the road. It was not good.
Collinsworth said it like 10 times. He's like, another missed throw, another missed throw. I was like, damn, Collinsworth was going in on him. But I mean, you know, it's what it was.
Yeah, it is what, I mean, it's what was happening. But the throw he made to Khalif Raymond, rolling left and kind of falling away, was the best throw I've ever seen Jared Goff make. And, you know, in those conditions, when he had been playing so poorly in the first half, it's the most impressed I've ever been with Jared Goff. And do I think that the Lions can win a Super Bowl with him? Yeah, I do. Do I think they can win a Super Bowl because of him? No. What the Lions have done really well that allows them to win a Super Bowl with Jared Goff is build from the interior out, and that's what they're going to continue to do. I don't see Brad Holmes taking a quarterback with any of the picks in the first four rounds. I really don't. I think we have five top 82 picks. I don't see him taking a quarterback there. I really don't. They love Jared Goff. They trust him. They want him to be the leader for the team, and I think they're going to continue to do so. Where I struggle with is, you know, will Jameson Williams reach his full potential with the Lions if Jared Goff is the quarterback? I'm not sure. Like, Jared Goff, surprisingly, and this is where I struggle, based off of deep ball accuracy, he was a top 10 quarterback in the league in terms of pass attempts over 15 yards. And, you know, when you move that to 30, he's probably not as accurate, but, you know, you can use Jameson Williams in that kind of way. But I saw the pass in Carolina that he underthrew by like 5-6 yards, where Jameson had three steps on the defender and it ended up being an incomplete pass. It's tough because I do think they're in a spot that they won't be in the future to get a quarterback. And I like Anthony Richardson. He needs a lot of time though before he's ready. If you can get a guy like C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young without trading away assets, I think you should, because this team still has holes and quite a few of them that they need to address.
You can't address them all in the draft.
I don't know. What Brad Holmes did this year, we had so many needs last year that we don't have this year because of the draft. We didn't sign many people. Yet, it's not an issue because Brad Holmes hit on damn near every single pick. Do I think he can do that every single year? No, but I think he's consistent enough to hit on majority of the picks where you can do it through the draft, where you don't have to spend a ton of money in free agency. You can use that money to spend on guys that you drafted. But I you know, Jared Goff
becomes of all of those guys hit the free agency, you know, like we saw that with like the Saints, like those. Yeah,
you have to let people go.
Where it's like, so many elite guys in the same class.
Yeah, I understand that, but they also paid a running back.
Yeah, that's true.
Which Brad Holmes wouldn't do. Like Brad Holmes isn't going to pay a running back. Like he is of the mindset that you are. He uses his first draft picks. He uses the early draft picks on positions of high importance. He doesn't spend, you know, he's not going to spend a first round pick on a linebacker. That's just not what he's going to do. He's not going to extend a running back. Like we saw what he did with Jamal Williams. I think Jamal Williams is making like $5 million a year. That's what he's going to do at running back. He's not going to draft a guy and then give him a contract extension that's worth, you know, $13, $14 million. And so I do think that you can win this way. It's just going to be really tough down the road when you have to try and retain all of these guys. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think that Jared Goff, you can win with him. I mean, he was a top 10 quarterback by statistical measure. Now, I think that a lot of that is due to because he is a really good quarterback when he is comfortable. Like when he is in his element, we saw it at home. He was a fantastic quarterback. But when you make him uncomfortable, he struggles a little bit. And you saw that on the road in some of the games where the elements, you know, played a little bit of a factor. He's at least getting next year. I know that for sure, and I wouldn't be surprised if they extended him. I really wouldn't, depending on how next year goes.
Okay, I have a couple of things, and I should have just made a takeaway about the Lions, but I knew you were going to, so I didn't want to. But first off, I think Jameson Williams, I think he kind of has a character issue. Every single time I saw him, when NBC cut to him, he is bitching and complaining about not getting targets or yelling because, you know, pass interference, typical among wide receivers. There was a lot of examples where it's like, you guys are beating the Packers. Just like relax for a second, brother. I don't know.
I know what you're talking about. I disagree because I know how much he just loves football and he just wants to be in there all the time. And I you know, I was even frustrated with how little, you know, he was getting used, in that, you know, the one time he actually gets a pass completed to him, we have a holding that didn't need to happen. And so I understand his frustration. Now, if it continues into next season, then I do think that it's a problem. But he had, you know, six or seven games in his rookie season. And I understand the frustration. He wasn't exactly used a ton, so.
And then a couple of things. All right. So for Jared Goff, I think you're right. I mean, saw this team with the development that you get from these other players. Fact of the matter is, with this sort of team, I think they can win a Super Bowl with Jared Goff. Question becomes, can they win a Super Bowl with Jared Goff without Ben Johnson? And he's going to get picked off as a head coach at some point. That's going to happen.
I'm worried about that.
He might do it this very year. And if not this year, then it's probably going to be next year. With how good this offense was, if it does anything close to that again next year, I think he's going to get picked off.
Oh, he absolutely will next year. Yeah, I have no doubt about that.
And then B, can the Lions win a Super Bowl with Jared Goff making $45 million?
I highly doubt
if he's playing as a top 10 quarterback.
I highly doubt that Brad Holmes would pay him $45 million a year.
That's the money he's going to ask for, right? I mean, like,
I think Brad Holmes would let him walk. Yeah,
because, you know, I mean, you look at, like, Kirk Cousins made $28 million 5 years ago. Yep. You know, like, that was the contract he negotiated 5 years ago, and now with the market adjusting, like, first off, that's more than Jared Goff is making currently. With how the market's adjusting towards quarterbacks and the, you know, deal that Deshaun Watson got, deal that Kyler Murray got.
Like, no, I know. I just don't think we'd pay him that much money. I hope not anyway, because, I mean, if we're being honest, I think that most of it is because of Ben Johnson. And I am a little bit worried about, you know, what Jared Goff is without him. The biggest worry that I have is that, you know, Ben Johnson, I would love for him to stay next year, to be around and be the OC next year, is that Jared Goff looks really good again with him next year, and then he gets a head coaching job, and we sign him to an extension, and all of a sudden, you know, it was really Ben Johnson that made him. Now, I do think that there's going to be, you know, the difference is that Mark Brunell, who's currently the quarterback's coach, is probably going to be next in line for the offensive coordinator if Ben Johnson leaves. And so I think there's going to be a lot of carryover from system to system. So I think, I don't know, we'll see. It's all hypothetical right now.
Yeah. The Cowboys needed that beatdown. That's all.
Yeah, no, I agree.
They got absolutely crushed. And from the second they walked out onto the field, it seemed like they were going through the motions, not really trying, not really playing hard. And I better hope it's this scenario, because the alternative is Dak's washed or Dak's not a great quarterback. Because those picks that he threw, and the one that he didn't throw right before the pick six that he eventually threw on that one drive, were terrible. Like, literally, like, he has had so many plays this year where, you know, it has been, okay, that's an interception. That's not his fault. You got to be kidding.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's another throw. Yep. Oh, my God. Like, I saw some statistic after the Jaguars game, I think it was, where it's like, he has been, statistically speaking, the unluckiest, if not one of the unluckiest, if not the most unlucky quarterback as far as turning the worthy
plays. I think if you saw how many, like, tipped balls he had, it's really unbelievable. I did see that he was, like, sixth in turnover worthy play percentage, though, this season.
Right.
But, like, so was Geno Smith was up there. Josh Allen was up there. Like, you can win with a guy like that, but it's just unfortunate that, you know, some of the non-turnover worthy plays became turnovers because of wide receivers not knowing how to catch a football.
Right. And so that really hurt. But then you go into his game, and he throws, like, three balls that should have easily been picked off of what it was, and goes for pick six. And the Cowboys get absolutely flattened in this game. I'm not willing to throw away, you know, the Cowboys being a 12-4 team with a win over the Eagles, 40-34, you know, based on one bad performance where they had nothing on the line. I mean, we saw the Chargers not play great, you know, even playing their starters for a half. The Jaguars really kind of laying an egg that entire game. Just, you know, week 18, some weird stuff. And what I think a lot of it is, like, I remember going back to 2020 year, the Browns played the Steelers. We played their entire backups. We barely win that game by, I think, 1 point or maybe 2 points off of a missed 2-point conversion, because our entire playbook, offensively and defensively, was the most vanilla thing we pulled all year.
Yeah.
Because we were playing them the very next week, and we wanted to show absolutely nothing of our playoff plays and, you know, stuff that we were actually going to run. And then we come out and we embarrass the Steelers at their home stadium in front of, you know, national television. And like the Eagles, you know, didn't play well against the Giants back at like 22-16. Like that's not really, you know, kind of what they were looking for. So there are examples of it throughout the league. And I think that's what had a lot to do with the Cowboys. Like, I don't at all think that this is like, oh, this is what the Cowboys are. But I do think it was a punch in the mouth. And I think they needed that because if this is a close game, the Cowboys win and escape and steal a win. I think they kind of think in the back of their head, like, oh, you know, we're fine. We can, you know, skate through Tampa Bay, an 8-9 Tampa Bay team. And, oh, we'll be fine. We can just kind of skate through this game and, you know, waltz into wherever it might be. I don't know what the implications would be because if with the reseeding, you don't actually know. But probably Philly would be my guess. But, oh, we can look ahead Tampa Bay and go to Philly, like blah, 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 blah. No, now it is you are – you know, no, inherently, you're not inherently better than any team you're going to play. You have to play well to beat Tampa Bay. You will have to play well, you know, to beat any team you're going to face come playoff time. And hopefully this will kind of light a fire in their ass and they'll play very well against Tampa Bay next week.
You need them to. That would be an unfortunate season. I did see a report that if the Cowboys go one and done, Mike McCarthy is not in jeopardy of being fired, though. So,
yeah. Yeah, Jerry Jones said that he's like, yeah, we love what they're doing. Yeah, we're not going to.
Yeah. Brandon Staley is an idiot. And I am starting to question his ability as a head coach. They are locked in to that game. I mean, they knew it too. Like, there's no way you don't know it. The Ravens-Bengals game was final. They are locked into the 5 seed no matter what happens in that game, and yet their starters play, I think, three and a half quarters of football. Yeah. Like, I mean, what are we doing? Mike Williams gets hurt. Joey Bosa gets hurt. Justin Herbert takes an unbelievable shot that he didn't need to take. And for what? I don't get it, and maybe it's because you don't want your guys to be rusty. Then put them in for a quarter. Like, the risk to reward was not there, and I really don't understand. It's inexcusable. I mean, we're talking about a team that hasn't been healthy this entire season, and they're finally starting to get healthy, and Brandon Staley just jeopardizes that all again. When they are healthy, they are a very dangerous team. I just don't understand what the thought process is there, why he felt the need to, you know, subject his team to possible injury long-term and an eventual run in the playoffs, but we'll see what ends up happening. It seems like Mike Williams is going to be relatively fine. I haven't seen anything on Joey Bosa yet. Justin Herbert's a warrior. He was going to play if he had an amputated leg. So it just felt like an unnecessary week to throw your guys out there to get beat up even more when you're already one of the most injured teams in the league throughout the season. So it is what it is, but at the same time, like, Brandon Staley has had a lot of questionable, you know, coaching decisions, and I'm starting to really, is he really the guy that is good for the Chargers? I don't know.
If Tua plays, the Dolphins can absolutely beat Buffalo. Listen, I've heard a lot about the Dolphins kind of being fraudulent, or, you know, and you know, they lost a bunch of games going into this. They're a 10.5-point dog, and I think that's implied that Tua won't play. But if he can play, and it's a big if, there hasn't been hardly any updates. It's just he's still in the concussion protocol. If he can get out of it, he can play, obviously, but he's got to clear all five steps. If he can, I think this game is a very close game, and I think the Dolphins can potentially win. Folks, listen to me. Yes, has the Dolphins offense looked terrible? Yes, it has all season without Tua, the quarterback, with Skylar Thompson, who is what? Like the 10th best rookie quarterback out of that class last year. Of course it doesn't look good. Are you kidding me? They don't even have Teddy Bridgewater, let alone Tua. Of course it's going to look bad.
Mike Glennon.
Mike Glennon, who they didn't play. But, you know, and they score 9 points offensively and they get the safety late for what was kind of a funny, you know, last second bad beat for some people who had, you know,
Dolphins minus 3.5 or something.
Right.
Or Jets plus 3.5.
But at the end of the day, this defense, literally carried this team to the playoffs in that game. They looked
Well, yeah,
fantastic
but
against
we're talking
the
about a Joe Flacco-led Jets team.
Sure, but at the same time, that Joe Flacco-led Jets team hung 31 on the Browns.
Yeah, but that's
Okay,
because the Browns' defense is poverty.
they still did it,
Fair.
and you know, the Dolphins, they allowed 6 points, and obviously the offense has been terrible going into this. But if they get to a back, we've seen how good this offense can be, and I look at you know the back end, and it's you know with Buffalo, okay, they win that game 35-23, and that seems fine. It's two kick return touchdowns. You know what I mean? That put them ahead in that game. Otherwise, I think they lose that game. You know, if you actually watch that game and, you know, see how it unfolds, the majority of that game, other than the big plays that occurred from Buffalo, it's 28-23 with 5-6 minutes left. They get a, you know, last second touchdown to kind of put it out of hand. But at the end of the day, this is a very close game and it's two kick return touchdowns. You know, and they get in, that's valid and everything like that. Kind of uncharacteristic of a Bill Belichick team to give up those touchdowns.
Especially the tackling on them.
Right. It's not something you can rely on come playoff time that, oh, well, we'll get two huge special teams plays. That'll put us over the top. So everyone is kind of conceding that this game is over and it's going to belong to the Bills. We'll see. We will see. Yeah. If Tua can play, I really think that this is a close last-second sort of game that we saw in the first two games, one of which the Dolphins won, and the other was a Bills win by, I think, six or something.
Yeah, I do think that if Tua does play, there has to be a question of how healthy he's going to be, because we can't just assume that he's going to come back and be, you know, what he was in the first half against Green Bay, because there is a very real possibility that he is what he was in the second half, because he's, you know, just not, like, he needs some time off. But I do agree with you that if he does play, this suddenly becomes a, well, the Bills are going to get tested, and it's not a gimme game that, you know, we thought it could be. I'm sick and tired of Bengals fans and their whining and complaining. I have never seen a fan base go from, you know, the lovable loser to elitist snobs so quickly, and I hate them for it. And oh, we deserve to have a coin flip game with Buffalo. No, you don't. You didn't play that game. You have a worse record than them. Explain to me how that would work. You are they are 12-4, right? No, they're 13-3. You're 12-4. How? Explain to me where a coin flip would happen. They have a better record than you. They have three losses. You have four. It's this entitlement that, oh, we're so good. We're so awesome. We got Joe Burrow at quarterback. We should have this coin flip. It's like, shut up. What do you mean? You don't get anything. You got to earn it. At the end of the day, you lost to Cooper Rush. That is why you don't get a coin flip game. That is why you don't get home field advantage. It's because you lost to a backup quarterback early in the season. And Mitch Trubisky. It's the same way that the Lions, you know, are probably a better team than the Seahawks, but they lost to them in week like four. They weren't able to get a stop. And at the end of the day, that's what matters. And so for
and the refs a little bit.
A little bit, but it is what it is. You know, you can't always complain about the refs. But like for Bengals fans to be, you know, complaining, they're 12-4, and all I see on Bengals Twitter is, oh, this is bullshit. This is the NFL out to get us. It's rigged. They don't want to see us succeed. The NFL is so against Cincinnati. Shut up. Seriously.
They don't care.
It's like the NFL does not care. What do you mean? And I do think that there is a weird thing with winning percentage that went into effect. Like it used to be just decided by winning percentage. The NFL changed it. But at the same time, if it was based on winning percentage, you wouldn't get it anyway. So I don't understand what the problem is. And I saw Big Cat arguing with a bunch of fans because it's like, well, they didn't play the game. Like you can't play in what ifs because it was 7-3 and the game wasn't over. Like it was the first quarter, 5 minutes left in the first quarter still. You can't play the what if game because there were still, you know, what was it, 45 minutes of football left to play or 30 or was it, 50. 50 minutes of football left to play. So I don't want to see Bengals fans do this BS anymore. They whine and complain, even though they're a phenomenal team. It's like, how about you enjoy your team's, you know, 10 game winning streak or whatever it ended up being, and stop complaining about the NFL trying to be or being rigged against you when it's clearly not.
Yeah, I think the only thing that they had a legitimate gripe over was the Ravens thing, but it's like you won that game fair and square.
Yeah.
Get over it. You know what I mean? Like you, if you would have lost to that Ravens team, you would have deserved
it. You didn't deserve it. You didn't deserve it.
The Browns need to grown up. You know, I mean, I don't know. I didn't really want to make this takeaway because it's like, oh, it's a DC defensive coordinator position. Who really cares? But when I kind of put my reputation on the line that the Steelers would lose that game to the Browns, you know, I got to say something, you know, and I was wrong. And listen, you know, offense didn't play great, but that's kind of the expectation. The Steelers defense has been one of the best of the season. But when you're giving up 28 points to Kenny Pickett and company, this is embarrassing. And rightfully, we fired our defensive coordinator. I don't like calling for guys' jobs. In fact, I hate it. But at the end of the day, something's got to be done. You know, we can complain and talk about how bad the defense is for as long as we want. But at some point, actions speak louder than words, and we fired him. We did. And now, you know, we're talking about the different guys. The biggest thing, you know, that we saw that really hurt this defense was guys, you know, not motivated to play, not being held accountable. Myles Garrett showing up late, John Johnson III making so many mistakes. What we need is a guy that can come in, command this room, tell guys, you know, really hold them accountable. And I think that guy's Brian Flores. And apparently he's, you know, the favorite. He was the linebacker coach for the Steelers last year. If you can get that guy in, who has been the head coach of, I think, two Dolphins teams that were both very respectable and whose defenses were some of the best in the league, oh my gosh, this defense will be held accountable and will play very, very well. So that is the guy I absolutely want, and I would be absolutely enthralled if we could get him. Beyond that, I've seen Jerod Mayo, which, you know, I think he's a really smart guy, and I think he was a fairly good player, but at the end of the day, he doesn't have any defensive coordinator experience. So, not really the guy I'm looking for. I don't know if he can really keep guys accountable, hold guys accountable
Yeah,
like the guy
especially
we're.
being in New England with a guy like Bill Belichick who already does that from a top-down level. So I do agree with you. I think Brian Flores would be a match made in heaven for that defense, something they really need. The Texans have royally screwed themselves. I mean, when you talk about losing the rest of your, or at least the next, you know, 5 to 10 years of your franchise on a football field, Lovie Smith absolutely screwed over the McNair family and the Houston Texans. I mean, when you hear the reports that you're likely going to be fired, or at least not retained, you know, I understand going for it. It was a last little, hey, screw you, bud, for even, you know, thinking about this. I had 1 year with a terrible team, and I the same thing that they did to David Coley, they did to Lovie Smith. And doing that, at least, you know, having a report out there before the game and allowing for there to be speculation, you know, it ultimately ended up being the cause of either the Texans having to trade up a bunch of trading a bunch of assets to move up one spot, or having to sit there and, you know, get whoever falls to two, which likely isn't going to be Bryce Young. I mean, Bryce Young could have changed the trajectory of that team, of that organization. It feels reminiscent of the Jets beating the Rams when they could have had Trevor Lawrence, and now you see where the two sides are. Instead, they get Zach Wilson, and the Jags are playing in a playoff game at home. Meanwhile, the Jets are out of the playoffs and don't have a quarterback. A move like that sets your franchise back 5 years. And I know that, you know, the NFL doesn't like the tanking thing. You absolutely need to tank if you're in that situation. The Colts did a fantastic job doing it, and I don't know if it was intentional. I don't know if it was just Jeff Saturday stupidity, but, you know, what they did was they kept Bryce Young out of the division, and they moved their draft spot up to either A, be able to trade up, or be in a great spot to draft their future. So now if they keep Jeff Saturday around, I think Jim Irsay stays on something. I mean, that is, whew, that could be a bad coaching hire. You good?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, sweet. We made it. We beat the buzzer. Minute left. That's how you do it right there. Thank you guys so much for watching. Oh, we'll have playoff predictions coming, I believe, Friday. We should have that. Should have that episode up. So really excited for that. I'm excited for what you have. For your, I've been toying around with mine. I think I know what I'm going to do, but I'm really excited for that. So, thank you guys so much for watching. Hope you enjoyed. Catch you on the flip. See ya.